This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
We need more amplification. Well, I can build the bigger head, the more amplification, but we need more speakers.
And Chad P.
So let me guess, Eddie Van Halen, Pete Townsend, and Eric Clapton were sitting around a weenie roast. Yeah. And so that's when Eddie Van Halen decided, I must have this type of amplifier.
Oh, no.
Class is in.
Gonna get loud today on Rock School. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the communication department, Southeastern Louisiana University. Sitting to my immediate left, I still gotta get used to saying that because for 2 years you were on my right. What's your name, kid?
Was your right hand man,
yeah.
Chad P.
Now you're the left hand guy. It's gonna get loud today.
Why? What are we arguing about this week?
There's no argument today because we're talking about Marshall amplifiers today.
Oh, it is going to get loud, huh?
Yes, it is.
Going up to 11.
Well, these only go up to 10, but believe me, with Marshall amplifiers, 10 is enough. When you go into any guitar store and you see, or any instrument store, and you see amplifiers along the back, there's all kinds. Mm-hmm. Vox, Orange,
PV.
And PV, and Fender, mm-hmm. and what I used to play, Roland, mm-hmm. and Mesa Boogie. Those are all good amplifiers, no two ways about it. And then they all have things that they do that make guitarists happy.
Right.
But even the person who's just got sort of a cursory knowledge of the world of music can come up with the name Marshall.
Well, yeah.
That's sort of the rock amplifier.
Yeah.
So today, for an hour on Rock School, I decided to talk about a amplifier that I've never actually owned. It was always too expensive for me.
Oh, wow.
So for an hour, I decided to talk about Marshall amplifiers.
How can you get 60 minutes talking about an amplifier?
Well, it's not just the amplifier. It's the history of the amplifier, who plays it, who has an amplifier dedicated to them. You'll see. Believe me, I can fill an hour. If I can fill an hour on one guitar, I can fill an hour on an amplifier.
Let's go.
First of all, it's not an American company. It's
Marshall?
A British company.
What?
It is. Jim Marshall started as one of you.
One
he was
of me.
A drummer.
Oh. Where are you going with this?
Yeah. In the early 1960s, he had a small shop in a place called Hanwell, London, selling drums and cymbals and drum stuff. And to keep a lot of the local people happy, he started picking up guitars.
Mm-hmm.
So because he had the shop and because he had the license, he could also import. So according to him, Jim Marshall, a couple local guys, you might know their names, Richie Blackmore and Pete Townsend.
Pete Townsend.
Started coming into his shop and kept saying, look, why aren't you selling more guitar equipment?
Because I'm a drummer.
Well, the drum stuff wasn't selling enough, so he started importing Fender amps, Fender guitars, Fender stuff from America. The problem was it wasn't very cost effective. It was expensive to get this stuff over there.
Yeah.
So when you talk to Jim Marshall, he actually credits Richie Blackmore, Pete Townsend, and the real expensive Fender equipment for starting the Marshall amplifier. When we get back, we're going to talk about where the first one came from, but let's give a tip of the hat to one of the guys that started him on the road to making amplifiers.
Who?
Richie Blackmore. Here you go. It's time to burn. It's Deep Purple. Rock School.
Oh, you're loving this, you and all your guitar people. The drums couldn't pay the bills.
No.
So we had to bring in the guitars.
We haven't even gotten into the concept of what kind of amplifier, what kind of speakers, and all of that. That's when it starts to get into the mini mad scientist that you actually like to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall decides to make his own amplifier.
Not
Why?
A problem, because Fender costs too much.
Right, it's real expensive to get it from America over to the UK. So he and his technician, his name was Dudley Craven, decide to recreate the Fender 4x10.
All right.
Now, when you're talking 4x10, what you're talking is a 10-inch speaker times four. Four of them.
Four
speakers in a square pattern.
40 square inches.
Well, yeah, I guess so. And a little bit more for the space of the screws to mount them to a plate.
All right.
Fender, however, here's a big thing about Marshall. Fender, however, mounts all of their speakers flat.
Okay.
All of them are flat.
All right.
Keep that in mind.
Okay.
It took six of them before Jim Marshall got the sound that he wanted. The sixth one was what he considered the Marshall sound.
What you mean it took six of them? Like he tried one and it didn't
like the sound.
Well,
tried again. Didn't like the sound.
With the same one, right? Just kind of maneuvering it around, or did he actually go through them? Like did he mess them up? I'm sure he probably did.
He probably tried it. Didn't like it. Tried different sound tubes. Didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Different gates. Didn't like it. Different speakers. Didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
When it finally finished up, the piece that was sellable were Celestion speakers.
Yeah.
These are nice speakers. They're not bitey. You can still buy them today. They don't have that real bite. They're smoother.
Okay.
They don't have that when they grab hold of a sound, they don't onto it. They're
okay.
Smoother than normal. They were 12 inches rather than 10, allowing for more wattage. Furthermore, the back was closed.
Uh-huh.
Fender's backs were open, so some of the sound could escape out the back.
Uh-huh.
What he did was put a closed back on it and a hole to allow some of the wind, which these things create, to come out the back.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got this nice little cabinet sitting there. Furthermore, and this is what a lot of people sort of recognize Marshall as, the head. The actual amplifier head was a separate element from the cabinet. The actual amplifier where the tubes are was a separate element from the cabinet. And furthermore, the two top speakers set at an angle. The bottom ones were flat.
Uh-huh.
The two top ones were at an angle.
So four 12-inch speakers.
Right.
Two flat at the bottom and two angled at the top.
Right.
With a back with a hole in it.
Right. Pitching at about 45 per amplifier. We're not quite 45 watts per amplifier.
Okay.
So we're not really pushing a ton of sound yet, but still equal to the Fender 4x10 Bassman. Loud.
Uh-huh.
But not screaming loud.
Right.
It just had a nice sound to it.
So that's our demo model.
That's really the demo model.
Okay.
But it got him recognized.
Uh-huh.
It got him names. And this guy walks in and he says, "You've been making fantastic amplifiers. Can you make one specifically for me?"
Me is who?
Eric Clapton. And Eric Clapton said, "Well, I need a specific blues sounding amp that will fit in my car."
What?
That's really why he made this one. It was called the Blues Breaker. Because at the time, Clapton was in John Mayall.
Hey.
And the Blues Breakers.
Well, look at that.
Well, how about that?
The world makes sense.
Hide away. This is Eric Clapton, John Mayall, and the remainder of the Blues Breakers. Rock School. That's Clapton and the Marshall Amplifier, the Blues Breaker.
He just walked into the shop one day.
Sure.
Hi.
He's known as a guy that builds amps for people.
Well, if you and I started building amps, what are the
not in
what are
today's
the chances,
day and age.
You know, that
not
Joe Perry or somebody's going to walk in?
Well, there wasn't Guitar Center back then. There was, and we're in the UK. Everything was being done in America at that point in time. Let me point out real quick. I don't want to get into it. Marshall got into a bad distribution deal with a company called Rose Morris, which really screwed him up for a long time.
Yeah.
They were taking something like half of all of the money that he made, just about priced him out of the market.
Why?
So for a long time, he just got into a bad deal.
Okay.
That's all there is to it.
All right.
So for a long time, he was putting out his amps under the name of Park, Big M, Kitchen, Narb, which is Bram, the guy who helped him build it.
Instead
That's his name
Marshall?
Backwards. Instead of Marshall, yeah, and
CMI. But that was
CMI.
His last name. Why you got to change that up? I mean, I know you don't want to go into
we
it.
We stopped selling them because of the price.
Okay.
Stopped selling because of the price. Well, now The Who is starting to really take off.
Yeah.
And they need to play bigger and bigger places.
Need more sound.
More sound. You got to remember, these watts are only going out at about 45.
Sure.
So Marshall is contracted, if you will, mm-hmm. by Pete Townsend. He needs more power.
Yep.
Townsend contracts him, says, get me double the power. Marshall does better.
Okay.
He comes out with the first 100-watt head amp. It becomes the standard in the rock and roll world. If you had to put your finger on a point at which Marshall becomes Marshall,
whenever
clouds
they
part, beam of light, you know what I mean?
The 100-watt amp.
The 100-watt amp, known as the SLP-100, or as most people in the guitar world know it, the Super Lead.
Okay.
This is 100 watts going into the 4x12 cabinet. This is the Marshall amplifier.
So he was able to increase the wattage without increasing the size of the speakers?
It depends on what kind of speaker you have. A speaker can be rated for many different kinds of wattages.
Mm-hmm.
There are little tiny speakers that will blow your hair off.
Oh, I know.
Depending on how you rate them.
But it just seems that if he's running a 12-inch speaker, four of them at 45 watts a pop, then naturally
you bigger speakers?
Yeah, just make it a 12-inch to a 16-inch.
Well, they become unwieldy. And after we finish playing this song, we'll get back, because the next thing he does is create a speaker system that's too unwieldy,
mm-hmm.
which creates the next generation of Marshalls and the next phrase, if you will.
Okay.
But first, let's talk about the Super Lead. I know for a fact that this song was recorded on a Super Lead. The Who. I can see for miles. Rock School.
I know you deceived me. Now here's a surprise. I know that you have, 'cause there's magic in my eyes.
Is it just me, or have we been playing a lot of Who this year?
Well, it's okay.
It's fitting, though, isn't it?
It is. It's very fitting.
It seems to be fitting.
Yeah, they kicked off the Super Bowl with the
True.
Who, so
True.
Why not? Make 2010 the year of the Who.
There you go. They are talking about Marshall amplifiers. They are we, the guys on Rock School. It's time for our first break, and you were going to name the audience.
I am. You know, I listen to all these other radio shows that have names for their listeners, so
yes.
I am officially dubbing the Rock School listening audience
yes.
those who must learn.
I'll go with that.
I'm not going to be the only one. So if you listen to this show, you
yes.
are one who must learn.
Those who must learn out at KLSU in Baton Rouge, thanks for being one of those who must learn on the Rock School Radio Network.
And those who must learn that listen to us in Shreveport, Louisiana on KSCL, enjoy the education and lecture of the Marshall amplifier. I can't believe I'm actually participating in this conversation.
Drummers everywhere.
Percussionists that listen to this show are going, no! Don't let him suck you into it!
iTunes! iTunes! An entire world of those who must learn. Back in a minute with another Marshall phrase that I know you've used and you think, why is it called that? I'm about to tell you. We'll be back in a minute. Rock School. Okay, talking about Marshall amplifiers today on Rock School. Now, we just talked about the Super Lead.
Yep.
That's the 100-watt lead. Now, without getting into how it happened, follow me here that The Who, while on tour, had all of their amplification stolen.
What?
Okay? It happened. Just take it. I don't want to get into where it happened and all of that. They switched over to Vox amplifiers for a little while, and all the amplifiers that they had, all the Marshalls, all gone. It just literally, they were without amplifiers.
Just because, like,
they just got stolen.
Huh.
It just happened. I'm not making that up just to tell you the next statement. It's just that it happened. Gone.
He didn't have any extra on hand?
Not for touring. I mean, you always have practice amps and all that, but there are specific amps you need for touring. You
yeah.
have to fill, you know, arenas
okay.
and things like that.
All right.
After the theft, they decided not to go with Vox and went back to Jim Marshall
mm-hmm.
and said, look, now this is Townsend and Entwistle, the bassist and the guitars.
Yeah.
And they said, look, we're going to bigger and bigger places. The Super Leads, thank you for doubling the wattage.
They're
but
not getting it done anymore.
Not getting it done anymore.
We need
more. Bigger. And they said, look, can you make new rigs that are yet even more powerful than the Super Rigs? He said, yes. The problem is when he built them, he had to, as you said, now he had to double the number of speakers.
Yeah.
So now you have 8. But instead of making them short and fat, he made them tall and thin.
Mm-hmm.
He doubled the 8 up.
Right.
So 2-2-2-2.
Right.
Straight up.
Okay.
The problem was they're unwieldy.
What do you mean, unwieldy?
Well, if you pushed them, they'd fall over.
We'll put them on wheels.
You couldn't, right. But the thing is, they're still too top-heavy.
Okay.
So what Jim did was instead of doing 1-8, mm-hmm. he did 2-4s. So now they can be stacked.
Uh-huh.
So now you have the phrase, the Marshall stack.
Okay.
So when you hear guitarists talking about, I play a Marshall stack.
One on top of the other.
That's where did heavy. It come from? It came from this, Entwistle and Townsend going to Jim Marshall and saying, we need more amplification. Well, I can build the bigger head, the more amplification, but we need more speakers. I need to build more speaker systems. I must stack them. Now you have the Marshall stack. Well, who bought them? Two groups bought them. The Who, obviously, yeah. and Steve Marriott and Ronnie Lane of The Small Faces. Now, what would the Small Faces have played? Well, their number one UK hit, Ichiku Park, right here, Rock School.
Over Bridge of Sighs, to rest my eyes in shades of green.
Okay, we're talking about Marshall amplifiers, and I want to make a quick point and play one more song before the bottom of the hour, so we'll go in just a little bit late. Marshall stacks. Normally, you don't think of The Who if you're a guitarist. You don't normally think about The Who when you think about Marshall stacks here in America. You think about two groups that toured in America with Marshall stacks, and it wasn't The Who. You think of either Cream, and mm-hmm. sometimes that's not what jumps to mind. You think about another guitarist who first became famous in the UK, an American who went to the UK, became famous, learned of Jim Marshall, went to Jim Marshall, bought his amplifiers from Jim Marshall, even brought his road crew in and had Jim Marshall's guys teach him the amplifiers. And then when he came back to America and became wildly famous, bought the stacks back over.
Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you.
Foxy Lady, Rock School. Hendrix on Rock School as we talk about the Marshall amplifier. And some of you think I give him the answers to these questions.
Sometimes he does.
Not always.
But not
you
that
got
time.
That one straight away.
Well, you gave enough hints. I was hoping I would.
Welcome to the bottom of the hour. I'm Joe Burns.
Chad P.
There you go. Let's do something called 7 days in 70 seconds because I am sort of giddy to get to the next song we're going to play. These are going to be the dates. Monday, the 15th of March. Beware the
Ides of March.
Through Sunday, March 21st. 7 days, 70 seconds. Chad has Monday. Go.
Well, let's keep in touch with Jimi Hendrix. In 1968 on March 15th, Life Magazine described Jimi Hendrix as the most spectacular guitarist in the world.
No betcha. 35 years ago, Tuesday, March 16th, credited with introducing the electric guitar to blues music, influential blues singer-songwriter T-Bone Walker. He's so good. Seek him out if you haven't already. Dies from complications following a stroke at age 64.
St. Paddy's Day, March 17th in 1968. Old Ed Sullivan decided to celebrate St. Paddy's Day by having the Bee Gees make their U.S. television debut. On his show.
Ew. Thursday, March 18th, 45 years ago, Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger, and Keith Richards and Bill Wyman are arrested in England for insulting behavior after they are caught relieving themselves out of doors.
Ew. March 19th, 25 years ago, 1985, Spin Magazine went into publication.
There you go. Saturday, March 20th, 20 years ago, the Miami Sound Machine are forced to postpone their tour after a tractor that they are driving, a tractor trailer, I assume, runs into their tour bus and leaves singer Gloria Estefan with a broken back.
Wow.
She had to have two metal rods put in there so she could stand up straight again. Sunday, March 21st, 40 years ago in 1970, the Jackson 5 release ABC, easy as 1, 2, 3. Now, we've talked about the history up to a certain point. Now I want to take the second half hour and start to talk about some people who play the Marshall amplifier and some of the people who have had Marshall amplifiers made specifically for them. There aren't very many. During the 1960s, Marshall changed to a more aggressive British valve. Now, what does valve mean? It just simply means it uses tubes.
Okay.
That's what it means. It was called the Mullard EL-34. Okay.
Why?
It just simply gave them a better sound. How do we know it's that specific one? These amplifiers...
It's got it written on the
front. No, it doesn't. These amplifiers were called the Plexis.
Plexis.
And it puts them at a specific point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Plexi simply means that the little yellow strip behind the dials mm-hmm. is made of plexiglass rather than anodized aluminum. Okay, so what? What do I care? I care because if I can ever get my hands on a Plexi, I have the chance to sound like Eddie Van Halen.
Oh,
because on Lord. Eddie Van Halen and Van Halen 1 and 2 and 3, they were all recorded using a Marshall Plexi, and I can sound like this. Rock School.
Oh, any day we can play Van Halen is a good day. That's why the sun is shining. So let me guess. Eddie Van Halen, Pete Townsend, and Eric Clapton were sitting around a weenie roast
As you do. Yeah.
And started just chit-chatting about their different amplifiers. And so that's when Eddie Van Halen decided, I must have this type of amplifier.
Oh, no.
What's the history behind? How did Van Halen come to have Marshall amplifiers custom made for them?
No, he didn't. He didn't. He just simply used a Marshall Plexi. One thing that he did, and it's actually nice that you asked me that because you'll get me into the next little section. Guitarists are known for modifying their amplifiers to make them sound exactly like they want them to.
Uh-huh.
What Van Halen did, many amplification modifications, but one of the big things he did was put a larger fuse mm-hmm. in the amplifier. Now, the fuse is there to protect the tubes.
Right.
You put too much electricity in it, too little electricity, the fuse blows before the valve system is destroyed.
Yes.
Well, he had a man over-modify it so a larger fuse could be put in it so it could accept more or less amplification.
Don't you void out the warranty whenever you do stuff like that?
Probably. You can't take it back to Best Buy.
Right.
He would then use something called a variac, uh-huh. which would change the voltage coming out of the wall, either less or more mm-hmm. coming in. He would overdrive, superheat, or less heat the tubes to get such a sound out of the amplifier.
Oh.
He was known for doing all of this kind of stuff.
That's why I don't play guitar, because I don't have a degree from ITT.
Yeah, many engineers. Now, here's another one.
Uh-huh.
In the 1970s, this is something that all guitarists think had been on an amplifier forever.
What's that?
Master volume.
Well, yeah.
All the way on the right. There's this little thing that's just a master volume. Of course, it's been there forever. Overall volume for the amp. No. Started in the 1970s. It was called the JMP series of amplifiers. Now, it may have been on other amplifiers, but in the 70s is when Marshall introduced the master volume. And it was picked up by a guy by the name of, you may have heard of him, Randy Rhodes.
Yeah, I know Randy Rhodes, Ozzy Osbourne's guitarist.
Now, when Randy Rhodes picked it up, he also had his amplifier heavily modified.
Of course he did.
On top of it. It's not the first amplifier built for a specific person. I'll tell you that after this song.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want, you can now buy what's known as the 1959 RR, Randy Rhodes. You can buy that amplifier from Marshall, and it is the exact, right down to the last resistor amplifier that Randy Rhodes used.
Wait up. If they didn't get master volume knobs until the 70s,
yep.
How did you turn up the master volume?
What you had to do was play with both the preamp and the amplifier at the same time. You had no control over the entire thing with one knob.
Right, because now you can mix highs, lows,
that's right.
mids, and everything. And then when you get the mix you want, if you want it louder,
turn the whole darn thing up.
Wow, so
couldn't
you
do that
really,
before.
You really had to do some playing around. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, see? Drums. I'll stick to drums.
You want it louder? Hit it harder.
Hit it harder.
Here's Randy Rhodes, Rock School. There's Randy Rhodes on Rock School playing with Ozzy Osbourne. And by the way, Quiet Riot his band that he came from, he, Randy Rhoads, came from before joining Ozzy Osbourne. His replacement, Carlos Cavazos in Quiet Riot, also plays through Marshall amplifiers.
Okay.
Oh, all the little things you learn. Mm-hmm. Hello, WBSD Burlington, Wisconsin. I'm sure there's people up there that play through Marshall amplifiers.
Hello, Radio Universidad in Salamanca, Spain. If you have a Marshall amplifier, you probably call it a different name.
L Marshall right. amplifier. When we get back, I will tell you the very first signature model Marshall amplifier. It wasn't the Randy Rhoads. I just brought that up because of Randy. I'll tell you the first signature model came out in the 1990s. Back in a minute. Rock School. Okay, now, as we talk about amplifiers, if you know instruments at all, any instrument manufacturer wants to align themselves with the big musicians of the day.
Oh, yeah.
And Fender, Ibanez, Gibson, there's just a slew of signature models, mm-hmm. no matter what kind of music you're into. Some instrumentalist from that arena
yeah.
has a, I'm sure there are drums.
Oh, yeah.
That there's the Neil Peart signature and what
Travis
have you.
Barker, and Travis Barker drumsticks.
Perfect.
And stuff like that, yeah.
Right.
Right, you push product that way.
Sure. There are very few, I mean, there's just a small handful of amplifiers named after guitarists.
Huh.
And the first one, you said you wanted to take a shot at
well,
it.
Well, you said 1990s,
sure.
so I'm trying to align
and
myself
it is somebody
in
from
era.
The 1990s.
Okay.
It's not like an older person they brought up.
It's just a shot in the dark. I'm going to yeah. say Mick Mars from Motley Crue.
Yeah. Close.
Okay.
Not bad. It's generally in that same kind of playing. How
All
about
right.
the guy from Guns N' Roses?
Slash?
Slash. Yep.
What?
In the 1990s, the first signature model came out. The amplifier was put together to the specifications of Slash.
Was that early 90s or late 90s, though?
I don't have the actual date. On the website, it simply said the first one came out in the 90s, and it was Slash.
Because if it was early 90s, it was Guns N' Roses. If it was late 90s, it was probably with Velvet Revolver.
Which is who we brought.
Hey,
let's go ahead and slither. Rock School. There you go, Slash playing through his, I'm sure,
custom-made
Marshall amplifier.
What was the name of it,
do you know? I don't have the model number here. That's
Marshall,
bad on my part.
The Marshall, I'm not allowed on TV because of my mouth, amplifier.
No, they're all given numbers.
Oh.
They don't make them in any kind of, you know, they don't call it the Slash or anything like that. For example, Kerry King of yeah. Slayer
uh-huh.
is the 2203KK, Kerry King.
So you can get your initials on there.
That's about it.
So his would be like the 2645ST.
SL, I guess.
No,
yeah.
ST. His name is Saul Thomas.
That would be, yeah, that would make sense. The Lemmy signature model is the 1992 LEM.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, the Dave Mustaine is the 1960 DM.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you one more, and we'll play it. The guy is named Paul Well.
Mm-hmm.
He's of the Jam and the Style Council. So they're really trying to hit the Brits over there. They're trying to hit sort of that newish wave type stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the 1987 XPW.
Hmm.
Not sure what the X stands for, but there's the PW for Paul Well.
It sure sounds really cool.
That's right. Here's Start. Rock School.
It's not important for you to know my name, nor I to know yours. Or is it we communicate for 2 minutes only? Will be enough.
That wraps it up. So the next time you see a Marshall amplifier on stage, you can turn to the person next to you and give them a few little facts about the Marshall amplifier, and they can look back at you and say,
please leave me alone. I paid money for this ticket.
I don't care.
Right.
Hey, I'm Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
We finish on Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top playing whatever guitar he happens to have in his hand, but you know he's playing it through a Marshall amplifier.
Catch you later.
Class is dismissed.